everybody, and welcome along to the Deggers and Lids podcast. It is the morning after, the night before. It is Monday. On Sunday, brand new World T20 champions. Now, that was going to be the case anyway, with two teams that have never lifted the World T20 trophy going head-to-head in the final. But it was New Zealand who managed to overcome South Africa by a margin of 32 runs, 158 for 5 for the White Ferns. South Africa could only muster 126 for 9 in their 20 overs. So, after an astonishing run of 10 defeats in a row, Lydia Greenway, coming into the tournament, we saw New Zealand over here, and they looked a shell of a side, and they walk away with the silverware. Incredible scenes, incredible stories. You are back from the UAE. And it was a hell of an event yesterday, wasn't it?
It was. And I actually I've been reading loads of articles because I just love reading different people's opinions on everything that's happened. And this quote that I read from one of the media outlets, it was New Zealand basically came into this tournament as rank outsiders, not even dark horses. And like, that couldn't have summed it up better, I don't think. And, you know, even New Zealand themselves, they came into this, what was it, 10 losses in a row, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
But then they won the first game against India, and you hear people within the group saying actually that impact, the impact of that win on that group was phenomenal. I spoke to Mealy Kerr, also spoke to Ben Sawyer, the head coach as well. And he just said from that point on, it just clicked and everything just went for them. People stood up at different times. Georgia Plimmer, who really struggled in England, as you and I both know and saw, she just unbelievable and so much admiration, because we've both been there as players when you really are questioning yourself, you're not sure if you are the right person for the job that you're being asked to do, and suddenly you just find a way. And yeah, it was a fantastic event. Decent crowd as well, I think about 21,000 people.
Yep.
So yeah, no doubt you would have been on your sofa, Daggers. I read about your Super Sunday. What a day that
super,
was.
And what a super day it was as well.
It really was.
So managed my base practice in the morning, doing inverted triads for those who are actually interested. Getting my fingers around the fretboard, and then went out for my favourite place, just in Bishop Stortford, for Sunday lunch. And then once I was fat and full, I could sit on the sofa and absorb everything from the Women's World T20 final. And do you know what? I'm sure we'll go back and forth, and there are certain aspects and certain areas that we'll forget now and cover, you know, in 5-6 minutes' time, because things keep popping into your head. But the overarching thing that I felt was this belief that you mentioned about the New Zealand team. Not once did I have them in the semi-finals. And I quite happily, openly admit, and I think Natalie Germanos said it on commentary, the majority and the thought from the cricketing cognoscenti was that it was going to be Australia, it was going to be India, it was going to be England, and probably South Africa.
Yeah,
that's where we were going, given the nature of the groups, how they all worked out. And there may be an upset. Perhaps we were thinking that Sri Lanka might cause an upset. And actually, I think in our preview, we said that Sri Lanka might cause an upset and New Zealand might be the team that they overcome to do that.
Yeah.
Fast forward, and they go and beat India. And as you say, I think from there on in, it was their approach more than anything. It was almost as if they've gone, well, bugger it. We've been crap for 10 straight games. We've not been very good. Let's just throw caution to the wind. And do you know what? And it showed it in the final as well. And I know I'm going from their first game to the final. But their 160 that they got against India, which really put India on the back foot, setting that total, they went out and attacked. Now, they didn't do that, and I thought they should, actually, in the game against Australia. Australia, you know, they will be more than happy to dictate terms in the power play.
Yeah.
And power plays, as we know, have been such a crucial part of this tournament. And they went out against India and they really cracked on in the power play and then had a really good innings from Sophie Devine at the back end of that game. Fast forward to the final, they took on Marizanne Kapp. They didn't let her dictate. And when you do, that is when South Africa can have a stranglehold and you feel the pressure starting to build because you feel that you've got to score in the power play after maybe two or three overs of quiet. They didn't do that. They went out and attacked Marizanne Kapp. And I just felt that that gives a signal. And if it comes off, if that comes off, then belief, the onus is shifted to the bowling side to have to play catch up rather than necessarily, you know, dictating terms. And I think that was one real big aspect of those two particular games, India and South Africa. And you know, once Marizanne Kapp got taken down, and she didn't get taken down massively, but once they'd showed the approach and the positivity against her, the big gun for South Africa, and I think that filters through the side somewhat. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, it was what South Africa did in their semi-final against Australia. Yeah. They really took them on. And it's that saying, isn't it? What is it? Where something like, if you always do what you've always done, you always get what you've always got. So I think teams have realised, actually, you do have to do something different in these big games when you're playing Australia, because otherwise the outcome will continue to be the same. And both South Africa and New Zealand went away from that safety approach of, okay, this is our plan, this is the threats that we've got that's coming up against us. Whereas actually, they were like, bugger that, as you said earlier.
Yes.
Let's throw our own punches. And I think
That is a Daggers and Lids approved word, okay? Along with bell end and arse, buggered is an approved word. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, I just think it's for teams who are obviously back home and watching, who had to watch that final, whether they could bring themselves to watch it or not, I think they could learn great lessons from the way that New Zealand and South Africa played their cricket. And in a way, you look at someone like Australia and that magic around them because of that loss in the semi-final has probably broken down a few barriers which teams thought were there, which is why they haven't been able to beat them in the past. So, it was just great to see. And obviously, Devine and Bates and Tahuhu as well.
Wow. I mean, I tweeted out and said, look, and this was around about sort of halfway through the second innings where, you know, once Wolfhart had gone and the rate was where it was at, I felt that was the game. The game had gone. And I don't think, because we, you know, doing what we do and commentating on the games and doing all the post-match interviews, and I remember there was a series, and it wasn't from last year when New Zealand were over. It was, I think, a couple of years previously. It might have been 2021, I don't know. It escapes me. And I was actually, you know, we get a roster of what our commentary duties, who's doing the toss, who's doing the flash interviews, who's where we are on the rotor of commentary and who's doing the post-match presentation. It just felt like on that earlier tour a couple of years back that I was doing every single post-match interview. I was doing every single one of them and doing the presentation. And New Zealand were just getting battered game after game. And I was there speaking to Sophie Devine, trying to come up with different questions. It's not easy, let me tell you, ladies and gents. It's not easy coming up with new questions or different ways of doing an interview when your side keeps getting battered.
Yeah.
And there was an element of that last year as well
when
New Zealand came over. And I thought of all of the interviews, and prior to that, it was Susie Bates. And doing all of these interviews with Susie Bates and Sophie Devine and having spoken to Leah Tahuhu as well, and this is not to say that South Africa didn't warrant victory as well in that, because you look at how they've improved, and we'll talk about them in a moment.
Yeah.
But given what they have been through, New Zealand's only world championship has come in the one day into a 50 over World Cup in 2000, right?
Yeah.
So they've waited 25 years for the next part of success. And we have spent the last, you as a player, and broadcaster, but me as a broadcaster over the last 12, 13 years, you know, seeing the trials and tribulations of a variety of sides. And I just went, do you know what? This must feel so good. So good for Sophie Devine and for Leah Tahuhu and for Susie Bates, who in so doing, playing in that final, became the most capped woman's player of all time, overtaking Mithali Raj, 334 appearances. Not one test, not one test match for Susie Bates. And I couldn't have been more pleased. And I see this genuinely, and I think you know this, and listeners will. I've always seen this as a neutral sort of sport for me. And that because I've not played in the women's competition, so I can see it a little bit more straight. And I don't think I could have been happier for three cricketers, world-class cricketers who I've spent time with, spoken to, and how deserving they must be. I mean, part of me, I know this sounds terrible, part of me hopes they retire. I really, you know, because this is the pinnacle. This is the pinnacle. And yeah, they'll feel that they can probably go and win the one day international World Cup, and maybe they can. But I just feel that this was so long in coming, and how great it must feel for those three cricketers.
Yeah, and I think actually I'll also look at it from a bit of a coaching point of view as well. If you look at Ben Sawyer, who's coming to the job, he was obviously involved in the Australian setup before that. He was head coach at Sydney Sixers. I think as a coach as well, I look at that and I think actually, sometimes things just don't go your way. You could be doing everything right behind the scenes. You could be giving the right messages. You could be setting up training in the right way. You could be building relationships in the right way with your players. But for some reasons that you just don't know, you can't get the results. And at that point, I think a lot of coaches and maybe captains would lose hope. But it just is, again, I think a really good lesson that if you believe in what you're trying to achieve with a group, then you have to stick by it. And if it doesn't work, you've done what you believe is best for that group of players. But it just so happened that for this group of players and this group of coaching staff, little did we know that actually they stuck with people like Georgia Plimmer, Fran Jonas, Eden Carson, and they all came good. And I really like that as a, just from a different point of view, I think it's a fantastic learning, really, for people involved in the game.
There was an element as well. There was a moment in that game where I thought New Zealand had won it. And it was the ninth over of the response of the South African innings. And it was Leah Tahuhu who actually bowled an over that conceded just one. And from that moment, the rate started then nudging up. I think it might have been around about nine then. And very next delivery, Amelia Kerr gets Laura Wolf out. And I tweeted, you know, that's Tahuhu's wicket. Now, of course, Amelia Kerr, don't get me wrong, I'm going to come on to her in a second. But that over was the over for me that won the game for New Zealand, because the pressure really did start to build. Annika Bosch couldn't get it away. You felt like with Wolfhart being the set batter that she had to go, and she did. She absolutely had to had to try and to have a dip at that moment and wrestle the initiative back from the White Ferns, and she put it straight down extra cover's throat. And that was the moment, that over from Leah Tahuhu, I thought was the killer blow for South Africa. And they really had to, and once you get new batters in and the rate climbing, we know how that game is going to necessarily trend. I want to talk about Amelia Kerr, because and I have been one that has said that she hasn't, for the quality of player that she is, I don't think, and I've said this for a while, that I don't think she's won enough games for New Zealand on her own. Now, I think this is a relatively fair comment in the past, and I think that there has been something holding her back a little bit, and I think she should actually produce more than she, because she is a world-class player. I think we can all see how good she is, but I think that in times past that she might have not really taken a game by the scruff of the neck and turn around and go, do you know what? I'm going to win this for you.
Yeah.
I think this tournament is a complete change for Amelia Kerr. This could genuinely send her into the stratosphere. And that's not talking for New Zealand cricket, but I'm talking about franchise cricket as well, knowing that she has had the performances throughout the competition. She was player of the match. She got 40-odd, got a catch, got three for, but also player of the tournament as well. And maybe it's something like that that can actually suggest to her that, do you know what? I individually can make a difference for a team in any one game. Sometimes it is going to be just down to me and I've got to go and win it. And I couldn't be happier for her. But I think that this could really send her even further skywards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the confidence that she now has with ball in hand. I think that's the shift that I've seen. Because when obviously being at the Mumbai Indians, I've seen how she operates up close. And I cannot tell you how much of an impressive cricketer and person she is. Like, her cricket brain, for the age that she is unbelievable. It's probably better than my cricket brain now. And you could see her on the pitch at times. She was, I don't know if you saw.
Lydia, I think you're one of the elite cricket brains in the world, but I would defend you like that.
But you know the point I'm making. She is years ahead of her time in terms of how she thinks about the game. But her awareness of the group around her as well, she is so switched on as to what her teammates are going through. So to have that empathy at such a young age, when we've all been much younger, when you're younger, you're just thinking about yourself. She has not got that. She is so outward looking in everything that she does. So I think the confidence that she's got with the ball now, I think allows her to then go out and be that match winner that you've wanted her to be for New Zealand. Yeah. Like I saw it for the Mumbai Indians, she won us a lot of matches out there. So I've sort of always had that belief in her. But as you say, until you do it on that big stage and in a big tournament, you're not going to go and do it consistently. So hopefully now she's got that key and has unlocked that recipe.
I've always said about Amelia Kerr is that her record and her record against big sides and her record is not that great. And we've seen we can only go on what we have seen. Yeah. And you know, when New Zealand are coming over here and they're losing five games and, you know, numerous series on the bounce, and we're going, well, where's Amelia Kerr? Because we know she can do it. We know the quality that she is. And it's almost a slight frustration that you're looking for something to get her over the hump of being that player that every other side is going, we've got to get it. Because she can still, it doesn't matter what game situation is. And there's an element of that to Divine. You know, whatever the situation is, Divine can still win you a game with bat or ball or Elise Perry or whoever it may be. And that threat of having Amelia Kerr just make that jump and make that leap is worrying, I would imagine, for sides around the world and also for sides in franchise cricket. Great. Scenes of celebration, wonderful. You might have seen the social media clip of Amelia Kerr actually playing the guitar in front of all of her teammates and singing. Really poignant moment for all of the White Ferns. Just a word on South Africa. You know, twice finalists now. Previous T20 final, which they were defeated by Australia. This time they're beaten by New Zealand. But I mean, overall, I thought, again, along with the White Ferns, that this was a side that was brave. Mm. It was filled with quality. It had good plans. It was led extraordinarily well, I thought, by Laura Wolfhart, who was leading run scorer in the tournament. And, of course, her runs have helped get South Africa to where they've been. But this is a side who can feel a little unfortunate that they weren't any good and just the better side won on that particular day. But I think in the cold light of day, their progression in T20 international cricket has been marked.
Yeah, it has been. And I think they're a side who I think over time has got a lot more belief in themselves. And I know they haven't got their hands on the trophy yet. Obviously, two finals and they haven't been able to come away with anything. But, you can tell from how they carry themselves. The biggest marker for me, which I saw from South Africa, which was something I hadn't actually seen before, was when they beat Australia, and they were through to... they beat Australia in the semi-final, didn't they?
That's right,
isn't it? Yeah, they beat Australia in the semi-final. And it was how they reacted after they won the game. There wasn't pitch invasions. There wasn't overt celebrations. It was actually, well, this is what we came here to do. So we're going to walk out there. We're going to shake the Australians' hand, walk back off the pitch, enjoy it for a bit, but actually then turn our attention to the final. And a few other people picked up on that. And I just thought that was impressive and largely led from Laura Vulvaert, who is, as you've already said, she had an amazing tournament with the bat. But as a captain, gosh, she's impressive. Don't know how much you saw of her or, you know, what you thought of her, but I just think South Africa have now got a leader who could lead them to a lot of success over the years.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's numerous things that you can take into consideration when looking at captaincy. You can look at the tactical changes, the bowling changes, the field changes and all of that sort of stuff. But it's in the other things that I kind of look for. I look at body language and demeanour. And it's just the perfect examples are people like Heather Knight, Meg Lanning. Okay, yes. And I look at them, and I'll tell you who else had it. Rachel Haynes had it as well. And it's just, I'm all over this. I'm all over this. I want you there, and I'm going to do this now, and you're going to bowl the next over there. Actually, I've just had a thought. You get loose. You're going to bowl the next one. And it's just this calm and quiet, not confidence, but assurance that they're in control and they've got plans whirring around and there is no sense of panic. And they don't get too up, and nor do they get too down, and stuff like that. And that their team are the most important ones, and they're, you know. So, and for someone who is as important to South Africa as Laura Vulvaert is, there is no massive show about it. There's, you know, I really do think she is. They're the things that I look at.
Yes.
As a captain, the command of the situation. That can be in body language or, you know, and of course, decision making. So I don't think she did a great deal wrong as a captain in the final. No. Sometimes there's got to be a winner, there's got to be a loser. And I thought overall, South Africa had a very, very good tournament. And I'll tell you what, it is interesting. Something harking back to the last podcast that we did, and we were talking about fitness. You know, we sort of made a big song and dance, well, Danae van Niekerk's not going to be in the side because she's not fit enough, and Liz Elley and stuff like that. They made that decision and they made their bed, and hang on a second, they've had a bit of success, haven't they?
Yes,
you know, they've made it to two world finals in the T20. You know, so there are elements of that which they can feel, well, we were right in doing this and setting these targets, and this is the sort of team we want to be. And it has paid dividends for them.
Yeah. And again, I think that point on the fitness, it doesn't necessarily have to be the point on fitness, but I think it's the fact that as a team, you have to have standards.
Standards.
And if someone isn't meeting those standards, then regardless of who they are, and obviously I'm not talking just about Danae van Niekerk's situation, but in any team, if you've got good enough standards, your output of a side will be what you want it to be. And I think for South Africa and New Zealand, they haven't got the resources that England, Australia and India have. But clearly what they've got in abundance is that sheer determination, motivation, brilliant team spirit. No one gets above their station, and they just all pull together, and that they see what they're trying to get to as the World Cup. They don't see it as anything else. You know, prize money, they're going to come into a lot of money now. And, you know, that would never have been their motivation. Absolutely no doubt about it. But I couldn't be more happy that, you know, those two teams, two of the most underfunded sides out of the top tier teams, are now going to be able to get a decent wedge of Wonga, and actually be a bit more comfortable. That's a good technical term, isn't it?
I feel like going and getting you a Pearly Queen outfit is a decent wedge of Wonga. You know, you're just down the old Kent Road. So yes, as Lydia turns into a character out of EastEnders and has just moved from Walford up to Leicestershire, we shall just take a quick look at the tournament overall. Legacies of this tournament? I mean, look, you've got to remember, a lot of people sort of say, oh, I don't know why they held it in the UAE. Let's remember, this was supposed to be held in Bangladesh, and because of political tensions and security issues and stuff like that, they needed to find somewhere pretty darn quick. They didn't want to change the timing of it. And the UAE put their hand up and were able to host it. And I think for that, it's got to be grateful that at such late notice that somewhere could be found to host. Australia was another example, but it's quite early on in the season there. Grounds haven't necessarily matured and in the heat of the summer and stuff. So I think obviously it was great to get it done there. So yes, of course, some of the crowds would have been down from what people might have expected. There was a really good crowd for the India game on a Saturday, the India-Australia game, I think it was. There was a great crowd for the final. But overall, what would your assessment be of this? Are now sides, can we look at sides starting to come together, or is there still a feeling that this may be a little bit of an anomaly and the big three are still the big three? How do you feel overall?
It's really tricky to just sort of sum it up in just one or two words. But for me, I will look back on this tournament and see it as the tournament which gave teams belief that they could beat the top three, because I think that belief has always been the big factor. I think that would be my biggest one, is just actually Australia, India and England. Yes, they're powerhouses, but they can be beaten and they have been beaten. And so you would hope that that would even out the playing field in the next World Cups to come. But I say that with a massive it's not a threat or anything, but what I really hope is the governing bodies of these nations who have done well, they don't kick back and think, gosh, haven't we done well? We've really helped our South African players get to where they are, because they haven't. That is the fact of the matter. So the boards of South Africa, New Zealand, West Indies, they have to do more to support their female players, be that through the financial support they give, the resources, but probably most importantly, their domestic structure. Use this as a clue that they're not that far away. So actually, the investment doesn't have to be massive. Just get your structure right. And the last legacy would be the drop catches, Daggers.
Yeah.
Nearly 100 drop catches. But anyway, we can gloss over that. What about you?
Well, I think the drop catches was one aspect, because this is something that those who don't watch a lot of the women's game, people are very easy and very quick to make snap judgments. And especially, let's be honest, blokes. And blokes who are watching it, and they're more than happy to turn around and go, oh, it's rubbish to keep dropping catches. This is village stuff. And it's an easy slight to throw at the game, because they don't watch it necessarily. And because it's on the big, and I'm just sad that we saw the standard of fielding that we did in this T20 World Cup, because that isn't what we are used to. And it's very difficult to fight that corner when it's very easy for someone to just throw out an easy tweet and just go, oh, this is village. You know, the under-19s about, or the under-15s about this and all. And it really frustrates me. It winds me up an absolute treat, because that has been the exception rather than the norm. However, I wish they hadn't dropped all those catches, because it isn't a good look for a tournament of the quality that there is within it. So that was frustrating. I'm with you in that. 2016, the West Indies won the World T20, and the West Indies Cricket Board go, oh, we don't need to do anything with our women's game because we've just won the World T20. Well, that's utter garbage. It's absolute garbage. And it is an easy excuse for boards. You look at three of those semi-finalists, as you've mentioned, South Africa, New Zealand, West Indies, they've not got a pot to piss in. Can we say that? Just getting a ruling to my left-hand side. Yes, we can say that, especially as you've gone all Cockney, all right there. They haven't. And so this has to maybe give that nudge to the boards of those. Let's expand that CPL. Let's get more people. Let's fund more grassroots cricket. Let's get girls in. And at the 7, 8, 9 years of age, sort of age group, and have schemes that you know, can sort of have a major influx into the talent pool that they will have.
Yeah.
Not now, but down the line and down the years. And, you know, South Africa, if you're going to do a T20, come on, let's do it. You've got the men's version. Let's do a women's version. You've got stellar grounds. You've got glorious grounds and fabulous venues that look so easy on the eye. And won't that look, you know, go do it.
Yes.
You know, let's be honest, the South African T20 is being run by India. Mm-hmm. Right, so let's get some of that cash and go and do a South Africa and do the best T20 competition, you know, out there. And so I'm prattling on now, and I'm not making a great deal of sense. I realise this, dear viewer and dear listener, but it's just the sort of energy that I want these boards to have to recognise what they've got with, and it doesn't take a lot. It really doesn't take a lot of money. It takes far less than pumping good money after bad into necessarily the men's game, and not getting anywhere. Let's you know, Bangladesh, throw some money at the women's game, would you? You know, and similar with other nations. But I'm on my high horse, and it's not my money to spend, but it's the will that I want these boards, because we want everyone, all who love the women's game, want this to be improving. And to keep getting and building on year on year. But I think it was a tournament that showcases the women's game in its best light? No, I don't think it was. We didn't see the power hitting necessarily that we're used to in other tournaments or in other countries, but you've also got to accept that it was there. So that was the nature of it. You're not going to get quick, pacey wickets to necessarily play on and subsequently not get the shots that we've come to expect either in India or Australia or in England. The drop catches was another thing. So from a certain aspects, I don't think it necessarily showcased it, but from a narrative perspective, a storyline perspective, I think it really did do that hugely well.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it. Did I enjoy it watching it on the sofa? No, I wish I'd been there.
But
I did enjoy. I did enjoy the coverage. And of you in particular, it's always you know, I'm biased on that front. And all of our guests that came on, you know, I loved listening to Natalie Jamanos and to Mel Jones and to you and to Katie Martin and you know, to Anjum and those who cover the women's game so diligently throughout the course of the year. It was great to hear you guys. That's it for another year for the ICC tournaments. We have the 50-over tournament to look forward to. That is happening, I think, in a similar sort of time next year, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel September, October,
I think it is, the 50-over World Cup. And we'll do plenty of build-up to that. But we are going to take a vacation. I'm going to take an actual vacation off to the United States and road tripping on Route 66 with my partner, Asher. So there will be no Daggers and Lids for a couple of weeks. But we have got very important issues to discuss on our return, which we're hopefully going to get some assistance with. There has been a ruling recently about the transgender policy from the ECB. We have not forgotten about it. We have not glossed over it. We will be covering that on our return, but we need a show to dedicate to those sorts of things. We also want to talk about Afghanistan women's cricket. And the best person to talk about that is going to be Mel Jones. And fingers crossed, she will be there to talk about England. We'll go to South Africa very soon. The WBBL will be starting. So all of these things we will be across on my return. And Lydia's just going to take a well-deserved break for a couple of weeks as well whilst I'm away. So thank you so much for watching or listening. We will return in a couple of weeks' time. Lots still to cover on the Daggers and Lids podcast, but we hope and sincerely hope you enjoyed the Women's World T20, and we'll speak to you in a couple of weeks' time.